Nina, back to business. Now, loads for you. We were talking, among other things, about how one news story yesterday said that the children are getting bigger and obesity is an issue. Today, it's the story says teacher bringing in food for kids because they haven't got enough food. So lots of talk about food. And we actually have a couple of texts pertinent to that. So I'm going to get down to business and read those to you. One said, listening to your show, you mentioned about kids' waist sizes is getting bigger, and I work in a retail shop that sells uniforms. And many children are coming in needing large waist size trousers. And in one incident, a child at about 12 or 13 needed a 50-inch waist trouser.
50-inch? You mean 50 centimetres, is it?
50-inch.
50-inch.
50-inch. So if you can imagine, maybe 40, maybe they miswrote that. But the overall reaction from parents is that they laugh it off, and they usually say he's big boned like his father, or is a big fella for his age. In only one incident has a parent accepted that her child was overweight and was tackling the problem, which I admired. Obesity seems to be now accepted amongst parents these days.
Yeah, you know, I suppose I think that's probably centimetres, Ryan. But essentially, when we're looking at our children, okay, people are getting used to seeing overweight children. I've actually had parents comment thinking that their child is too skinny when the child is actually perfectly healthy. I think as a society, we have got so used to seeing people who are overweight that we now look at people who are in normal weight and think that they're underweight. Clearly, it is not good to be underweight and it is not good to be overweight. But I have a huge concern about obesity in children in Ireland, as do most healthcare professionals. Our children are getting bigger and not in a good way. We are now a society of overeating, and we are seeing it in children in uniforms. And it upsets me for a number of reasons. I think you mentioned both these children around 12, 13, yeah, which is probably when they're starting secondary school. The entry to secondary school is a really difficult time for many teenagers. It's a huge change. Everything's going on. They're hitting puberty. Their body's growing in ways. You know, they're dealing with new friends, new environment. And then if you end up being the overweight child in the class, who unfortunately, you know, these children are more subject to bullying. We know that people who are overweight do get bullied more, do feel more isolated, are more at risk of depression. So just from a psychological point of view, all those effects of being overweight. And then what happens is, as well, you've parents a lot of the time saying, you know, I see it all the time. We'll discuss weight with the children. The parents go, I don't know what it is. We've healthy food at home. They won't eat it. And inevitably, when I look at these families, it is extremely rare that you see a very overweight child and a very normal weight parent. Okay, it is rare. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's rare.
And you what mean I both everyone's overweight in the family.
Exactly, yeah. And I think sometimes, or even the parents might be slightly overweight, or even if they're not overweight, they might not be the healthiest family.
Okay, well, the issue seems to be here is denial. Is that the parents go, no, it's grand, and they'll be grand, and everything's okay, and he's big boned or he's fine, and all that stuff.
Well, there's two things. You have the parents who don't think it's a problem, who look at their children and think it's okay. They'll grow out of it. They'll, you know, it's puppy fat. But you also then have the parents who say, I don't know what it is. I keep telling them to eat healthy, but they won't do it. And what I would say is it is not up to the child to decide what they eat. And I really believe parents need to take control here. You don't love your children by giving them whatever they want to eat or allowing them access to whatever they want at home or buying them whatever they want in the supermarket. There has to be a certain sense of limits put on by the parents. And parents need to be realistic. Don't, like, I have had parents complain because I've weighed their children. I've actually had it raised that when I weighed a child and then discussed the fact that the child was overweight. And obviously, I've learned over time that there's a way to do this. And, you know, you can't just go in and say your child is overweight.
We talk about you annoyed centiles. The parents with your analysis.
I actually got a complaint letter once from someone because they were upset that I had weighed their child. And, you know, when I wrote back and I explained, you know, that, and I hadn't done it in an insensitive way, but I explained that it was, you know, that I weigh every child who comes in. I hadn't isolated this person. Pretty much everyone who walks into my surgery gets their height and weight done regularly.
Yeah.
So this is not something I was targeting. But and what I do is to try and show people what's normal and what's not. And we talk about centiles in children. And I think it's really important for parents not to be in denial, because the earlier you get in, when you realise that someone is gaining weight disproportionately, I mean, all children gain weight as they get older, but suddenly if their weight is taking off more than their height, then it's time to be concerned. And the time is to stop there.
Here's one that says, I have a beautiful 12-year-old girl who is carrying extra weight. So that's a polite way of saying what we know, what she's saying. She's tired all the time. She won't exercise or take part in sports. Her new uniform won't fit her today. And I'm really upset for her, Ryan. I'm parenting alone and I don't know where to turn. She refuses to go to Slimming World. And to be honest, I couldn't afford it anyway. And there's always lots of healthy food in the house, is what you were saying. She doesn't know when she is full. From listening to me, that's really tough.
We now talk about, you know, babies learning about satiety and appetite. And we actually say breastfed babies end up a healthier weight many times than bottle-fed babies. And they wonder, is it the breastfed babies learn to self-regulate what they eat from a very early age? We need to just put proportion, you know, put things in proportion. Okay. Also, parents need to sit there and look at portion sizes. You can't you can't serve your children these huge portions at meals of healthy food and then expect them to limit the intake of unhealthy food. If you have unhealthy food in the house, no matter how much healthy food is there, the child is going to go for the unhealthy food. We are born liking sweet food. We have to acquire a taste for other food.
Is that a born? Is that
you are born liking the taste of sweet food. It's a natural thing. People actually are born liking the taste of sugar.
Wow.
Okay, we learn to acquire the taste of others. There was a dietitian told me that once. I think parents need to take responsibility. We do not recommend diets for children, especially at the age of 12. They're going to take a growth spurt. It's about having healthy food, about giving them access to healthy food and not denying them treats. But these treats don't have to be food. You know, that's the other thing. If you're good, I'll buy you a chocolate bar.
What about the girl who says, I'm never full? I want more food.
Yeah, because the more you eat, the more you want, and your stomach gets bigger. And one thing I always say to overweight people when they're trying to lose weight, and again, it was a dietitian said this to me, it is normal to feel hungry when you are adjusting your diet. Some people, you hear about people going on these diets where, oh, it's great, you feel full all the time. Your body has to get used to eating less food. Your stomach has to get used to having less food in it. It has to shrink. So there is a phase where you're going to feel hungry, but you have to give goals. So for a 12-year-old, say, I would say, look, what is it something you really want? It might be a new outfit. It might be an outing with mom. You know, mom said she's a single parent and it can be really hard to find time in there when you're trying to work and have the money to do stuff. But even just putting time aside and giving them a goal to go towards, short-term and long-term goals, back to the old reward system of,
yeah,
you know,
you're a great believer
well.
In that, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to eat well. And the good thing is once people start to feel better, so this girl is feeling tired all the time, she's not partaking any sports, let mom and herself go for a walk every evening. That'll be half an hour together. It's not going to cost anything, but it'll be a way of getting exercise and some quality time in together. And it is hard when mom comes home and she's exhausted or dad comes home and they're on the couch and they're watching telly, but you can incorporate exercise into your daily life. You can, don't just, you know, don't say the cupboards are full of healthy food, get rid of the junk out of the house. If it's not in the house, no matter how much you want it at 10 o'clock at night, you can't have it.
Okay, so there is a discipline thing there,
but
isn't there,
as well? I think parents, and I'm not going to blame children for being overweight. A child does not make themselves overweight.
Okay, so
and I'm not blaming parents saying they're bad parents, but I'm thinking parents have to take some responsibility and look at what they're buying, the example that they're setting. You know, I've seen parents with a box of biscuits beside them plowing through a whole packet and then saying to the kids, oh, it's bad for you, you can only have one. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be a
lead from
the
front.
Example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. On other stories, a 40-year-old woman with what used to be great skin, which was great, but have recently developed perioral dermatitis around my mouth area. All advice is that hydrocortisone creams make it worse. I rarely wear makeup.
Okay, well, we talked about perioral dermatitis before, and there are two fairly common causes. One is low iron, so it's always worth getting your iron levels checked. But interestingly, if the hydrocortisone is making it worse, it's a chance that there's a fungal element to it, and you can get slight fungal rashes around your face. A simple thing would be Caniston cream can actually work quite well on that, and you can buy it over the counter.
Caniston cream, yeah. That's where she needs to go. Okay.
Give it a try.
A very bad bloodshot eye, one, it seems. It is called episcleritis. And I have had to go to the doctor on a number of occasions. I put on two lots of antibiotic drops. That's eased, but it has not gone. It has gone from bad to worse. In fact, it is hot, but not sore. Can you help? I'm on a public waiting list. Should I go private? I'm now embarrassed to go out in public.
Okay, so this person kind of falls on the borderline. If you come into a doctor with a what we call a unilateral painful red eye, you'll actually be sent to an eye emergency department because it can be a number of nasty eye conditions. So if you come in with kind of a gritty, irritated red eye, it's quite likely a conjunctivitis, which is inflammation of the conjunctiva, which is one of the outer layers of the eye, and that often responds to antibiotics. When you get the sort of more in between what we call inflammatory conditions of the eye, you end up not coming within the emergency department, but not necessarily being able to be treated by your GP. Sometimes these require steroid treatment to reduce the inflammation, but you shouldn't have steroid treatment in your eye without a full eye exam, which has to be done by an eye specialist. If the eye is starting to get hot and irritated and you've tried everything, I think it would be reasonable for your GP to ask for you to be seen in one of the eye A&E departments. Then they could do an eye exam and at least prescribe the steroids, which, you know, might help.
Now, my 2-year-old little girl has a patch of raised red dots on her foot. It hasn't bothered her, but this morning I noticed a little crack in the skin. Should I take her to the GP or would you recommend something over the counter?
Okay, well, raised red dots on the foot. I'd be interested to see, is there anything in the baby's hand or bum or around their mouth? Because the little red dots that are slightly raised could be hand, foot and mouth, which is a viral illness that children get. But you don't normally get a cracking in the skin. So if it's raised red dots and if the skin is scaling and there's cracking, it could be a local dermatitis, which again could be fungal. But it sounds like you probably do need a doctor to look at it, because they'll, you know, obviously, as I've said many times, when it comes to rashes, you need to see them, yeah. And seeing them can actually lead to
it's
the diagnosis.
Too hard. That's hard to do that blind, really,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
I understand that entirely. Another weight-related question, which is from a 43-year-old female who says, I've gained about 2 stone in weight due to quitting smoking, but my problem is my bladder. Every time I cough, I leak. If I run, I leak. Any suggestions?
This is a really common problem in women, particularly, she said she was 42, is it?
43, yeah.
So I wonder, has she had children? Because obviously, particularly after childbirth, quite often the pelvic floor is not as strong as it used to be. And then, you know, when she's coughing a lot now that she's quit smoking and she's gained weight, so there's a lot more pressure into her pelvis. So anything that causes pressure into the pelvis will make you more prone to it. Certainly losing weight will help if there's less fat, there's less pressure down into the pelvis. And I do empathise. I know a lot of people eat more when they quit cigarettes. Going to a physiotherapist who has an interest in pelvic floor exercises can help. They can give you exercises to do, techniques that'll help you tone your pelvic floor and help with that, because leaking when you cough is what we call stress incontinence. It's due to weakness of the pelvic floor muscles. If that is not working, there is an operation that can be done, can be tighten up the pelvic floor, and it can work quite well for stress incontinence.
I was talking to a medical friend of mine a couple of years ago, and he was saying that he was in this area, and we were having a drink of all things, but he said one of the things that is not discussed is the leaking thing.
Yep.
And he wasn't laughing, obviously, he's a professional like yourself. And he was just saying that it's so taboo that, you know, like if it happens, he said he'd love to hear people like us talking about it on the airwaves, because it happens all the time for women particularly. Yep. But no one's willing to say, look, here it is, this is what it is. So do you want to just give that a minute and say what it is and how prevalent, or what can be done to help?
There's two types of incontinence, and they are more common in women, the stress incontinence and urge incontinence. And stress incontinence, as I said, is a weakness of the pelvic floor muscles. It is more common after childbirth, because obviously the process of childbirth, you know, extends the muscles, and then physically pushing out the baby weakens the pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. And most women, although advised to, don't necessarily do the pelvic floor exercises after the baby's born. And over time, and if you've had more pregnancies and heavier babies, the muscles just are a bit weaker. And then as you get older, then you can also have this urge incontinence. It's where you have an irritability in the bladder. It can be that the nerves to the bladder are overactive, or for some people, they can have a low-grade infection that's irritating the bladder. So often you have people who have a combination of the two, and that's kind of the worst, because they'll cough when they... I mean, they'll leak when they cough or laugh or jump.
What do they do, though, if they're at a meeting or something and you cough and you leak and or you laugh, something funny happens and suddenly you're leaking where you leak from? What can you do?
Well, women wear pads a lot. And again, this is something a lot of women don't talk about, but, you know, they'll wear pads. But it can be extremely embarrassing and debilitating. I've met women who will avoid going out, actually, particularly when they've urge incontinence, because stress incontinence is often a small leak. It's rarely the whole bladder. Urge, your bladder can just empty for no reason. And obviously, that can be even more traumatic. Always talk to your doctor. There are options there. This medication can help calm down the nerves to the bladder. As I said, in stress incontinence, there's physio, and then there are operations that can help. Obviously, your friend is probably a urologist, and they're the guys who are girls who are experts in this area. But it is something, he's absolutely right, it's something that should be talked about. I see it all the time in general practice. It's not something to be embarrassed about. It's really common, and you know, talk to your doctor. There are options there.
You mentioned the pelvic floor. I have a weak pelvic floor muscles, as a text. I went to the chemist to get a machine to help tighten them up.
Yeah.
And he told me to use a vibrator. He said it's as good. Is this true?
Well,
why are you smiling?
Because I just think it's interesting that the pharmacist recommended this. I can see that a vibrator would obviously lead to toning of the pelvic floor. The physios that you go to, they do actually give you, there are little devices that they get you to insert to try and hold on to kind of tighten the muscles and hold on to it for extended periods of time to tighten that pelvic floor. So they're not exactly vibrators.
But not far removed from.
It's a similar idea, but I would think you're probably better off going to a physio who will advise you in the correct process and the, you know, the correct devices to use.
Rather than taking a punt on a vibrator.
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Burns, I have a very bad smell off my urine, but I don't have a kidney infection, but I do get very bad sick stomach.
Okay, well, you know, the food you eat can affect the odour of your urine. I mean, I think everyone knows if you eat asparagus, it can give a very strong smell to your urine afterwards. If you're not drinking enough water, your urine will smell stronger. Is this a male or a female, did
doesn't
they say?
Yeah.
Obviously, in a woman, you know, I would always recommend having some swabs done because a vaginal infection can lead to smells in the urine. And in a male, if you have concerns, you know, getting an STI screen just to make sure it may not be showing as a straight urine infection. You may have another infection, although they don't usually cause an odour in the urine. I'd start off, I think, with that by drinking loads and loads of water to make sure your urine is well clear and hydrated. If that's not settling the problem, then maybe going back and getting some more tests done with your doctor.
We'll take a last one about excess sweat. Sweating, it comes up every so often. Any suggestions, supplements or anything? I sweat without overly exerting, not just underarm, all over the body, and very embarrassing. And I'm not overweight, I eat healthy and I'm very active.
Yeah, again, you know, this can, your genetics can influence how much you sweat. Again, fluids, I know I keep saying it, but if you're anyways dehydrated, your body will concentrate your sweat and it will smell stronger. Now, it won't make you sweat less, but your sweat will smell more and you'll be more aware of it. Other than that, we have talked before, there are prescription antiperspirants, Botox is used to help with oversweating. Yeah. Things like thyroid can make you sweat more, so it's always worth getting these tests done. But unfortunately for some people, it's just a genetic thing and it's not always something that can be sorted.
And it is there we leave it for today. Nina, thanks so much. That was a busy one, and but we appreciate you coming in and giving us all the run on that. And we'll see you in what, a couple of weeks' time?
A couple of weeks, yeah.
Okay, thanks,
Nina. Take care, thanks.